Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Max Spoilers from MinMax. MinMax is a place about games, friends getting better. My name is Ben Hansen, as you can see at the name tag below me. I'm joined by one Brian Vohr.
Hello.
And one Ross, the Star Wars Guy Fund.
Hello. Happy Daylight Savings Time.
Hey, happy Daylight Savings Time to you. Everybody's favorite time of the year. We're all springing forward, and we're springing forward in our seats to watch the grand finale for The Last of Us TV show. We did a Max Spoilers covering the first episode of this darn show, and we're here to wrap it all up with the grand finale and probably, you know, find some highlights in there, in the middle episodes. But everybody watching live on Twitch, you're welcome to jump in there and let us know what you want to talk about as well. We're happy to cover whatever you want to cover. Spoilers, obviously, for the HBO show The Last of Us. We're going to spoil everything in here, so you've been warned. Here's the stinker. Here's the tricky part. Last of Us Part 2, I'm going to say no spoilers for Last of Us Part 2. Maybe we can have a section at the end where we can dive into it a little bit, because I think there's some interesting stuff to talk about, but don't expect big, huge spoilers for Last of Us Part 2 in this. Also, just let's get all the basic stuff out of the way. If you're watching this on YouTube, thank you. We're glad you found us. You can always subscribe to MinMax's YouTube channel. It's a little click for you. It's a huge thing for us. At the same time, you can unlock the podcast version of this discussion, all of the other Max spoilers, early access to the MinMax Show podcast that's ad-free, and most importantly, podcast version of The Deepest Dive. And this goes right in your favorite podcast app. You don't have to listen through the browser or anything. So if you support us at the $5 tier on Patreon, all this wonderful audio is just right to your phone. It's as convenient as any other podcast. And you might be interested in unlocking the podcast version of The Deepest Dives, because we're wrapping up our Deepest Dive on Like a Dragon Ishin, which Leo's been hosting. It's been awesome to listen to. And then at the end of the month, I'd argue on like the 27th of March, we're kicking off The Deepest Dive on Resident Evil 4's remake. It's going to be the best and most discussion about that game on the internet. So if you want to help support that or join the game club directly and submit comments, you can go to patreon.com/minmaxwith2ends. And Brian, as we all know, this is all connected because Resident Evil 4, big inspiration for The Last of Us video game. Am I right?
I'm not sure I knew that.
Yeah, totally. Come on, man.
Did they tell us directly when we were there for the cover story?
Yes. With Game Informer, we went to Naughty Dog and they looked in our eyes and said, this is absolutely inspired by Resident Evil 4. Because remember, the big thing was like, okay, we want the clickers to be like the chainsaw guy where it's like one hit. Like they had their points of reference over and over again. So, but we're not here to talk about Resident Evil 4. We're not here to talk about no darn video games. We're talking about Prestige TV, baby. HBO is The Last of Us. Ross, I haven't been scrolling on Twitter. Like, this has been my creed for this year so far. So I'm kind of delighted. I didn't even check Reddit. I have no sense about anybody's reaction to this finale, except for my friend Rory, who I watched it with, who hadn't finished the game, but he was a huge fan of the show. So like, it was fun to unpack it like in this little clean bubble there. But what is your sense of the finale? What do you think the internet sense of the finale is? Where are we at with this thing?
You know, the only reactions I care about to this finale are your guys's, so yeah. I haven't been checking either. But I have to imagine that it's similar to how the reactions to the finale of the game when the game came out, right? There were people who loved it. There were people who were like, Joel made an illogical choice, which is a kind of a crazy take. But one of my biggest personal things was, I don't remember the lore about Ellie's birth being covered in the game. Is it? You're the biggest game expert here on Last of Us, I think.
Ooh, there are fans that are way bigger than I am. I don't think so. We knew her name was Anna, but outside of that lore of the birth, I don't think is even in there. Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but even like the Marlene connection with the mom, was that in the game? Or is that in notes somewhere? Did I forget that part?
Yes, you hit it on the head with the note. There was a note that either, I can't remember if Ellie had already or if she picked it up, but the note and the switchblade were included, and there was a message from her mother, and I believe there was the connection to Marlene.
Okay.
But this, I managed to squeeze in the final Last of Us podcast.
Ooh, nice.
Apparently this new scene was something they tried to get made in the past as like, maybe we'll do it as a short or a live action thing. And then they were never able to get it to come together. So when Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin, the creators, were sitting down, Craig's like, all right, what kind of stuff you know, do you have out there like anything loose threads or whatever? He's like, well, I had this origin birth story that we never were able to make. And he's like, oh, God, I want that so bad. You have to give it to me.
That's the perfect cold open for episode 9 for the grand finale.
Oh, my God. It was so effective. And the fact that they like it was so perfect to cast, you know, the
Ashley Johnson. Yeah.
Ellie from the game. Right.
As the mother. Yeah, it's so weird when you hear her talk, then it's like, oh, that's right, that's Ellie's voice. All right, let's just have to zoom past that. But, like, this is this is the weird part. It's like, acting, you know, take it or leave it. But during this whole section, I was like, hey, that's real cool. Ashley Johnson gets to be in this show. Then I was like, oh, boy, I'm projecting too much. But I'm like, if I was an actor and you get to be in the show, you just get to be writhing in pain and pretending to give birth. I'd be like, oh, God damn it. Like, that's just so intense. It's just like her one role is just her screaming in the most primal, painful sequence imaginable, but it freaking worked, man. That was effective as hell. Like, that part, it's such a wild idea where she's like looking down her stomach all scared and then fending off the infected, and then the baby's out by the time she looks down again. It's like, oh my God, that is such a weird, gross idea.
Yeah, I thought I had had my fill of traumatic birth scenes
yes.
after watching House of the Dragon,
yes.
but HBO
yes.
got us again.
Okay.
Yeah, oh. My wife gave birth a few months ago, and I was like, I think you could handle Last of Us. Because we bounced off of House of Dragons after that first episode.
Yeah.
Because of that. And then this, I'm like, I don't know if she can watch it. She gets all the way to the end, the last episode, and then have something like this for her. So I don't know. We'll give her some time. Maybe she'll watch it. She has been part of the Pedro Pascal, like, love fest that's
love
going
fest.
On right now, so she might be convinced to watch the show.
Yeah, now I watched his Hot Ones and enjoyed it. This is, by the way, I understand this is bad podcast content to have somebody checked out of internet feedback and Twitter, then be like, what's Twitter saying though? Is the idea that just over the last couple months everyone's just been getting hotter and hornier for Pedro Pascal, and is that just a fever pitch at this point? Is that generally what's happening out there on the internet?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You've got
okay.
this hit show, and then you've got him, like, making appearances on all kinds of fun things and just
yeah.
being, like, hilarious and adorable. Even on the Oscars last night, everyone's like, oh, look, there he is.
Look at this
he's
cool
a presenter.
Dude. Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't hurt that he's on, like, simultaneously two of, like, the biggest shows
yeah.
right now.
Mind-boggling. Yeah, for sure. And then when you're craving more, just go back and watch Wonder Woman 1984 again. You can see his weird Trump character that everybody loved. I don't know what everyone's read on that character was. But okay, so the Ellie birth thing, do you think, is it clear in your two's minds that that is why she's immune? Because a little bit she got like the immunity blast, the vaccine came through the umbilical cord before it was cut? Because they made such a big deal about it of, you know, Anna talking to Marlene, be like, I cut it before I was bit. Or it's like, that don't make no sense. But is that your read on this thing?
Yes, for sure. Her saying she cut it before it was bit was just her way of saying this baby is safe and you
right.
can take it.
Right.
You know, so she's just lying about that to keep Ellie safe. But yeah, my recollection from the game is that it was never really delved into why she had the immunity. And as soon as you see this, if you played the game, you're like, oh, this is clearly how
right.
she is immune. She just got a little taste of the cordyceps through the umbilical cord. And then that is what did the trick. And then there was the extra line that I think Marlene said to Joel when they're in the hospital after he wakes up, where it's like,
yeah.
oh, you know, the electrical signals from her brain, blah, blah, blah. So I don't recall that being in the game either. So it's like it gave it a little extra context there, which I appreciated.
I feel like more of this weight now is falling on Marlene, since she knows how Ellie was born. She should have like sounded the alarm, like Lord of the Rings, light the towers, be like, hey, you know what? If you have a kid and you want to roll the dice, if you are willing to get bit and then cut that cord just a couple seconds later, there's a chance, right? Like, it'd be interesting, like in The Last of Us Part 3, that became like an accepted way to have a vaccine is like, if you want to gamble, you can gamble this way, everybody. But I guess I don't know how many parents would actually try and take that step. Maybe that's a bit
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that's...
We do have a fascist government in this storyline, so I'm sure they'd be happy to jump into that.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's not a yeah, that's an angle.
Interesting that she purposely puts her in Fedra, to raise her. And also, she has to wait till Ellie's a teenager to really put this theory to test, right?
Right. I guess
like,
so.
She has to, like, somehow get bit. You know, they have her protected, and then she has to, like, somehow be exposed to the virus on purpose or not.
Right, right.
And then she's like, well, okay, she... it was seen off screen where after, you know, the Riley incident, that the Fireflies found her, and she, Marlene says that she's the one that stopped them from shooting her just right immediately, right?
Right, right. I loved Marlene's kind of 180 of being like, I can't kill you, Anna. And then leaving the room. And like, I think it's such a good character moment for Marlene. Then when she comes back into the room, she's just like, all business, just basically walking and storming, bam, just shoots her so quickly. Oh my God. It was so brutal.
Yeah. She didn't get a lot of screen time, but, the character I thought was really well done. Of course, yeah. We know the actress is very familiar with the character, and, just that moment shows that she is willing to do what needs to be done. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense then that she's like, yeah, I feel bad about it, but you know, Ellie's brain's got to come out of there.
Right, right. Overall with the show, we have so many more details to jump into, but since it's the grand finale, where are we at? Brian, what do you think of the season? How'd they do?
I really can't believe they were able to do what they did, especially so many times they're like, okay, we're buying the story from you, Naughty Dog and Sony, but you know, we'll take it from here. Thanks. You know, we're just going to handle it. But to bring in Neil Druckmann so closely for this show was so instrumental. And you could tell Craig Mazin was such a fan because so many things, you know, things are changed when maybe they don't necessarily work for TV. But some things, like so many shots in this last episode, were exact from the game. And so many scenes were just so accurate. Like, I know people are going to complain about anything, but like, this is probably the most like true and well done adaptation I've ever seen.
Well, it's up there with Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City. There's no doubt about it. No, but even having like this section in this last episode where time is so tight to have 30 seconds of them talking about a ladder and like dropping a ladder so the other person can climb up. It's like, okay, they know their audience. I mean, I think that's right. You know, I'm sure people are being nitpicky about a thousand different things with the show, but just like zooming out, it is just a level of like, holy Lord, it is a miracle that they pulled this off as well as they did, that they were as subtle. And I mean, I don't know about you all, but like the fandom for this show has blown me away. Like, it's just spreading so much. I mean, you know, like all of my wife's friends are really into it. I ran into my neighbor yesterday and he was talking about what a big fan he was about it. But hang on, try and understand this one. I lost sleep about this last night because I ran into him and he's like an older guy. But he goes like, yeah, we're watching Last of Us on HBO and I wanted to play the game. And I saw it was coming out for PC soon, but I wanted to go buy it on my P3, as he put it, because it's cheaper. I was like, okay, PS3? Okay, sure. But then he's like, yeah, so I bought it on my P3 and I've been playing it, but what the hell? It's like the same story. What's the point? It's not even that great anyway. And I was like, what? Like, you like the story enough to go buy it on the PS3, but then you're playing on the PS3 and you're bummed that it's the same story? So it's like weird to have people go back expecting a different type of game or like a different story. Whereas from our perspective, it's like, oh, it's a miracle that it's so close and still works so well as a show. But it's just, it is mind-boggling how big this show has been.
Yeah,
it's really huge. And it's, I think they, like you're saying, it did such a great line of, did such a great job of towing the line between being extremely faithful at times and then making changes when it is smart to do so.
Yep.
And it's really, this might be a crazy thing to say, but I think I probably like the show better than the game.
Interesting.
Yes. For one thing, it was way less stressful in certain parts because like any time they would skip over like what I remembered to be a giant like infected, you know, action scene, I felt like a huge sense of relief. Like, oh, the characters don't have to go through this. This is great. I remember dying 30 times in this, you know, basement mall or whatever it is. And but I'm curious if you guys thought it was ever too faithful or not being faithful enough at certain points? Did you have any strong feelings either way?
Being faithful enough. The whole thing, it's still, I understand the spores. It is a silly thing. And I know they talked about it plenty of the podcast about just like, okay, it doesn't really make sense because spores would be everywhere and the gas mask is a core part of the gameplay. But the only part that's still kind of, you know, I know people are upset that there's not enough infected in the show, which I don't know. I think it was all right. There's plenty of big action stuff with the infected. But I think like the detail of the infected can like feel every footstep. Is like one of those things like that seems like a huge deal that I don't think they touched on maybe as much as they should. It feels like that should be like civilization defining at this point of just like, okay, they can feel you walking, everybody. Whereas normally it came up a couple times here and there, obviously, you know, them in the mall and whatnot. But it feels like every encounter with infected should be defined by stepping on the ground, right?
Right, they're like, okay, put on your felt shoes, everybody. We gotta walk silently.
Right, it's an interesting angle, but it's like that is such a big idea. You know, maybe as I'm talking my way through it, it's like they touched on it a couple times. I guess I don't know what else I wanted. You know, it just feels like such a big swing.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. The part where I thought there was only one part where I was like, is this a little too faithful to the game, and that is in the Henry and Sam episode where the bloater is, I think that's right. The name of it, comes up out of the hole. Yeah. I'm like, oh, the boss is here. Oh no, everybody.
it's
like we
could
have just
off.
Had a horde of zombies, right? But the big guy came out.
Right.
And it was a nice moment of levity for me in that otherwise bleak and brutal and depressing episode.
Yeah. And scarier than the bloater in that episode is like the little infected girl in the car is like crawling over the car. Oh my God, that was rough.
The girl in the car was so creepy. I believe they got like an acrobat or something
really?
To play that so that she could move around in the car like all crazy. Oh, so
were you getting flashbacks to Barry season 2 episode 5 on that one with the feral little girl? That's what I thought of immediately.
Your favorite episode of TV of all time?
Yep, that's the one.
It really, this show hit me in a weird way. Naturalized it for a lot of people, but like in the credits for the final episode, it was just this moment of just like zooming out again, just being like, my God, this is so wild. It's like seeing the Naughty Dog logo at the end. And I know it's so stupid, but it's like, it just really put things in perspective. Like we've come so far, like being a Crash Bandicoot 1 fan to go from that era to now seeing the Naughty Dog logo at the end of an HBO show where it's been so impeccably adapted and like being as subtle of a show as it was throughout the entire thing, I think is impressive. The interesting thing is, at least, you know, in the room I was watching it with, the subtlety, I wonder if it was almost too subtle in this final episode, because definitely, you know, my friend that I was watching with is like, what? What is it? They mentioned her brain real quick. Like, I don't even know what's going on. And suddenly Joel is on a killing spree. And it felt a little fast for him, at least. And I was... going into this episode, I thought, like, there's a lot that they have to get through here in one episode. I think this is going to be, like, episode 1. I think this is going to be, like, another hour and a half long episode or an hour and 40, whatever the hell the first one was. And for them to make it one of the shorter episodes, it's like, it was flying. Is that just my perception?
Yeah, I had a little preview, I thought, somewhere online that it was like, oh, yeah, this final episode's only going to be X number of minutes.
Wow.
I was like, what? I was like, well, I guess, you know, this was a few episodes before the finale. So I was like, well, you know, if they're at the facility, you know, a decent amount of time, but he kind of wakes up and it's just immediately it's go time.
Right.
But I was thinking about it more, and Marlene, last time she saw all of them, like it was Joel and Tess, and they were very begrudgingly taking her
right
as just like a shipment. So I'm sure part of her, when he woke up, she was just like, well, obviously, they probably, you know, they're in the same place relationship-wise. So he's like, oh, I did my job. Time for me to go. Thanks for me for telling me, like, what's going on here. But I'm going to peace out. See you guys later. And he has a very different reaction than maybe what she expected.
That's interesting. Yeah, it was bold as they're, like, marching Joel out. I'm like, they put two guys on this? Like, this idea that clearly there's this trained killer that they're marching out who has a connection with this person you're going to kill. You don't think you need a couple more troops on this thing?
generally speaking, I'm totally fine with shorter episodes of things. I don't think we need to like extend things unnecessarily. But,
yeah.
But I could have used another minute or so, maybe in that scene where he wakes up and he comes 100%. To the realization that I think it did get across the idea like, oh, she is going to die from the surgery, whereas kind of the assumption that they'd been running under, and I think the viewer and the game player run under, is that her blood is going to be drawn and they're going to do something with her blood. So they could have hit that a little harder, maybe, because it was just with Joel in the show, it was just like, oh, cordyceps is in the brain is what he says, basically, right? And from that, as the viewer, you have to infer that he means that they are taking her brain out and she won't survive whatever the surgery is. But yeah, it could have been a little longer there, I think.
It is weird. Like, I understand from Marlene's perspective, Ryan, that's interesting that she doesn't think maybe there's that much of a connection there. But for the show, at least, it felt like we needed a 4-minute sequence. I know that's probably an eternity in TV, but just of Marlene and Joel talking through it a little bit and just like, yeah, I appreciate the subtlety, but not having a line of just being like, hey, wait, that'll kill her. Like, I don't know. It's weird to be pushing for like, they should have really hit that on the nose more with TV. Normally I'm screaming the other direction, but like, I'd be surprised, or I'm curious to see like how many people watching it that weren't familiar with the game fully understood what was happening and why exactly that was happening. Because like, I do like, you know, Marlene has that line of like, you know, I was there when she was born, Joel. I'm the only one who understands what this is actually all about. And like, I care for her more than you do, even, is the implication there, right? In a couple ways. And so I thought that was a smart angle to try and just head it off emotionally for like, nope, Joel, you don't understand. I like her more. And this is what we need to do. But it still feels like we needed to soak that in a little bit more, because it is, then the violin starts cranking and then it's Joel just going bananas and killing everybody in the hospital.
Yeah, I think it works really well with the opener and then this closer as a way to connect her more. I think it's really effective for the Marlene character.
Yeah.
To be able to see that back to back. But I don't know. Do you think it would have been more effective to see them like talking to Ellie and getting her prep for surgery, and what are they telling her? Like, what does she know going into it? Or I kind of like that she's just like, we don't know if this has already happened, if she's already been cut into. So Joel might be doing all this for nothing, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. I think that's interesting. Yeah.
I like that, seeing her, because also you're in the same boat as Joel then, where he's like, well, she could be telling the truth that they didn't scare her and tell her she was going to die. Or, you know, they could have just strapped her down on a gurney somewhere and she was in distress and whatever too.
One thing that was so neat about that sequence is in the game, you spend the whole game killing infected, fireflies, Fedra, you know, you're just, every game is all about murder.
Right.
Pretty much right these days. But when you see it in a live action context, him doing the exact same things you did in the game, it just seems so much more like monstrous, right?
Well, that's it. I think that's what's really interesting about this is it feels more so than the game. And maybe this is, you know, time and place and whatnot, but it feels more so than the game. It's like, oh, Joel is a monster. Where obviously I understand that was a read on the 2013 game and they wanted people to debate that and all that stuff. Was Joel in the right, in the wrong, all this stuff. Whereas at least the way I felt it watching the show, it felt much more like, ooh, Joel, absolutely not. This is horrific. And like, to the point of, you know, then even afterwards when he's talking about Sarah again, when they're walking around, it just feels like he feels desperate. It feels clammy. Like him talking about the sweetest storyline in the show and in the game now with this relationship with Sarah now feels like, dude, like don't even talk about that. There's no emotionally redeeming yourself. And I was trying to think of like why that is. And I think part of it might be just the idea that in a video game, we're used to solving every problem we're confronted with like, all right, and then you shoot your way through it, and then that's the finale. And so even gunning down, you know, hospital workers and fireflies in this situation, it's like, well, it's not that different mechanically from what you've been doing the entire game, right? Whereas in this show, it just feels like there's so many more ways to solve issues and problems in the world. So him picking up the gun and just killing everybody, which is video game 101, it feels a little more foreign and so much more extreme here. So it makes you more anti-Joel.
I think what's different too is when they have that conversation with Tommy back in, you know, the settlement, they just talked about like, you know, we did what we were best at. It wasn't always the right choice, but like Joel kind of reverts to that primal, like, well, I'm best at killing everybody.
Right.
So that's the only tool I have in my toolbox right now.
Yeah. This is one area where I felt the same in the game as I did in the show of how horrible it is that he's doing this, because all the other times he's killed people, you're like, well, they do kind of have it coming. They're like raiders. They're immediately trying to hurt him. And while that's true here, it's like these people, are kind of trying to do something noble, even though it's at a cost that Joel is not okay with paying. So that's what makes the ending so good, I feel like, is that you're like, it's terrible that he's doing this, but you also understand 100% why the character makes that choice.
Right. And it's interesting, that idea of earlier on, Joel says, I think it's in episode 6 when he's talking to Tommy, he's talking about Ellie. He's like, she deserves a choice. And now it's the weird thing of like, okay, he is robbing her of that choice. He is going to assume that this is what she wants and that I'm going to lie to her and move along. But is it Marlene who's telling her that he needs to, like, it's interesting to have that flip then. Yep. People trying to convince Joel, like, no, actually she deserves a choice in this situation. And he's hell bent on that not happening.
Yeah. Well,
she's even further. She's like, she would choose to save humanity.
Right.
And you know that. And he's just like, ugh, you can see it kind of on his face, like that he knows it's true.
Right.
Oh yeah. Such a great scene.
Yeah. Oh, and like, it's interesting that this sequence felt really fast to me, at least. And then they added what felt like more time. I'm trying to remember the end of the game and how much time there is after the hospital, but it felt like more time of them kind of walking around a little more, exploring, driving in the car. There's a whole sequence where they're in the car and Ellie's waking up and she's like, where are my clothes? I was like, Raiders attack the hospital, barely got you out. It's like, you get to see like a couple more waves of Ellie being like, I don't know about this dude. Like having that kind of seep a little bit more before the grand finale of her just seeing, okay, kind of builds to that even more now.
Yeah. And I would love to hear you guys take on that last scene of her saying, okay, did you get the same exact read on it that you got from the game? For me, the game, for whatever reason, made it feel a little more like she was not believing him. And it wasn't as strong in the show, but I still feel like that's the case. Like she doesn't believe him.
Yeah.
What did you guys feel like?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like maybe even the show, made it even more clear. And maybe it is like that car scene and stuff, kind of seeding those ideas. Like, no, this is bad news.
Yeah, like she's more like testing him to see, like, I'm pretty sure this is what you've done, but I just want to hear you if you're going to tell me the truth or not.
Right, right.
After they've had their biggest bonding, like in that post giraffe experience, like, you know, he finally talks about Sarah without, you know, losing his mind. And, you know, he tells him the story about his, you know, bullet grazed scar and,
right,
you know, what he was really dealing with there, like opens up to her more than ever. And then like, that may be the only window they have of being close. Cause like, you know, they only had that, and then the flashbang goes off, and then, you know, they have the post time where now she doesn't really think she can trust him, I guess, is the read. I don't know. I'm trying not to think too far ahead
too much of
other
part
parts
two.
Of the story. But
right, right. Other moments throughout the entire series that pop for you guys? Mortal Kombat 2 in the mall. I thought it was interesting that Ellie knew all those fatalities, where it's like, did she just find like a game guide somewhere, some booklet or something? Like, how is she learning all these things? That's impressive.
Yes. Riley did admit that she's like, yeah, I have played this a little bit, but like, how many quarters would you have to go through on MK2 to discover fatalities on your own? It'd be insane.
It's very
I can't remember. There isn't like a move guide or anything on the arcade cabinet itself, right?
I cannot imagine. No. She's just
I don't think so. Like maybe you get one from the attract mode, but yeah.
Yeah, so she's just been going in there like Groundhog Day. Just that's been her life over and over and over again. Still, to get those fatalities, that's a lot. But you got to do it. It's fun. It's silly for sure. But other favorite moments or sequences from the entire show?
Yeah, that episode was my favorite one. The Left Behind episode.
Yeah.
Is just with the teens trying to be teens in the apocalypse was so cool. And the carousel, like they... After we recorded after the premiere, I was like, I hope they do a ton of 80s songs in this show.
Right.
To now that we associate them with danger. And there wasn't a ton, but the when Take On Me was playing, that was great. Great song. And, you know, just you associate it with danger. So it makes you more and more, it like ups the tension, which is mm-hmm. fantastic. And then Just Like Heaven on the carousel was, It's a big stretch to think that a carousel in 2003 would have some kind of like fun version of a Cure song playing, but I'm willing to go with it because it was such a cool cover and it was just more danger and tension.
Yeah.
I think like feels like a big turning point. I know it had Last of Us had a strong premiere, but I feel like a big turning point was episode 3.
Yeah, of course.
Nick Offerman, like people were like, oh my God, this episode, you have to watch this show. Like, even though it was like the least Joel and Ellie episode that there was, like, good God, what they're able to tell in the span of one episode, a whole relationship, and like being able to show like it is possible to have happiness and be able to thrive in this world if you kind of create it in the way you want it to live. And
yeah, and I like that. One of my favorite things about that episode though is that it kind of is beautiful in how it showed that like, yeah, long relationships are happy, they're also going to be really tough and sad at times, you know, like having like the jump cuts to them like immediately arguing and screaming at each other. Like I felt like that was such a beautiful tone of just like, nope, it's tough and we kind of hate each other, but we love it and it's worth it ultimately. It's like, instead of just being like, you know what, if you can just fall in love in the apocalypse, you're golden. It's like, well, not exactly, you know?
Yeah.
As long as you're a super talented doomsday prepper, yes. That's a key part of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. With a huge stack of, you know, huge stash of supplies. But it was a cool flip, too, when it seems like Nick Offerman might be the one that's killed in that raid. And then they kind of fast forward and he's the one, you know, pushing, I forget it, Bill.
Yes, yes.
Around in the wheelchair because he's gotten sick.
Yeah, that was incredible. And like, I understand the argument of like, well, then everything to do with Joel and Ellie. It's like, it ultimately gave them a really clean, sweet truck, which was one of the most beneficial things, and all this food and all this stuff. But it's like, it was worth the detour. Episode 3 of a show, you can take a detour like that if it's that well done. Like, absolutely no problem. We're here for a quote-unquote bottle episode, whatever the hell you want to call it, you know?
Yeah, it's like, do you want... Like, they're going to build a whole town and a huge set just for them to walk in and read a note and be like, okay.
The part in that episode that is still bizarre is, like, the confidence that Bill had that the flamethrower at the fence would, like, kill all those people. It's like, it just felt like full Home Alone of, like, wait, so you just hope they stand here and then the flames, like, go directly on them and then they die from that? But you know what? He seems to know what he's doing when it comes to killing, so that's fine.
Real tower defense mindset.
It was, yeah. You know, it was fun to have those moments of like when the gun would never go off, you'd be like, oh, I never get sick of this. This is always satisfying. So that's fun stuff. That's fun stuff, man. Let's see, other bits and pieces. I mean, the David stuff in the last episode, that was about as rough as we all expected, I'd imagine. Seeing Troy Baker in there as James, his right-hand man, was fun. Looking so gaunt and just, ugh, like, I don't know if he lost a lot of weight or how much of that is makeup, but I was amazed by that. And I don't know if they've covered it in the official one, Brian, but on Play Watch Listen, one of my favorite podcasts now, Alana Pierce hosts it. Troy Baker's on there and he was talking about filming episode 8. And it's interesting hearing him talk about, like, I forget exactly his phrasing, but he said that he had like a big scene that was kind of his big scene. I think it was in the lodge and they ended up cutting it. And he got really pissy about it.
And he had really?
Like, yeah, he's like, yeah, I had to have my ego kind of put in check. I was kind of spiraling and just feeling miserable and terrible. And I was kind of confrontational with the director. And then, you know, Craig Mazin talked to me and we got back to a good spot. But it is, you know, it's just a nice reminder. Like, okay, this basic ego stuff happening. Even somebody at his level who, I mean, it's incredible that they gave so many roles to people from the game in this show. But even then, it's like, yeah, but if they cut your part in a big way, like, that's still going to sting quite a bit. But
wow, he was not bringing up old wounds on the official podcast. All that's right. For sure.
Everything was great on the official podcast, but it's nice of him to be that open about it. But speaking of which, I mean, it's interesting that in the finale, in the hospital sequence, like one of the nurses, assistants, other doctors in the room, wherever they are, but it's like, oh, Laura Bailey, I recognize those eyes. That's Laura Bailey.
You recognized her just watching?
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. I was delighted by that. I'm like, okay, that feels like Laura Bailey's eyes. I think I got it there.
Yeah, they were saying that they reached out to her kind of last minute. It's like, any chance you'd want to come in and play this part? It's going to be, you're going to be masked and everything. She's like, no, that sounds awesome. Like, I love that. I love that idea.
Yeah. Also, it's funny to imagine them like filming during...
too much, but she's kind of like a major character in the second game.
Right.
So it's interesting to see.
Yeah, there's
especially where they chose to put her too, you know.
Right. Yeah, somebody on Twitch was saying that she actually played that role in the first game too. That she was one of the doctors. That's interesting. I didn't know if that's true, but let us know in the comments.
Yeah, she was kind of she played a variety of kind of random parts throughout the first game, apparently.
Huh. Jake Z asked live on Twitch, you talk about what others around you who haven't played the game thought of the ending. Yeah, I did a little bit, but did you all watch it by yourself then? Ross, you watch it by yourself?
Yep.
Okay.
I watch it by myself, but my sister-in-law watches the kids, and every Monday when she comes over, I'm like, oh God, she's out there right now, and I didn't get to talk to her before this.
Oh.
Every time she comes over, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to hear what she thought. Like,
yeah, I would imagine it has made people a little sour on it in general. But I do think that it's what you wanted from the game. We all know, and we kind of forget because the game is such a classic and we all kind of have accepted it. But I mean, there were definitely naysayers back in 2013 for the game's ending of saying, this is dumb, this is stupid, that's not even a real ending. I'm sick of this Sopranos nonsense, you know?
Do you think that's people who... wanted like the happy ending that are saying that, because it's pretty definitive. It's the end of their journey, you know, and it's not like they lived happily ever after or they died, but
right.
it's such a definitive end.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, maybe they want something. I don't know if happy ending is the clear thing, but it's better than just one of them dying or something. And I'm glad they didn't change it. I'm glad that they kept it from the game, you know, that it was so damn close. And I saw some interview where the director was like, they shot even like an extended version of it, of them like walking away and stuff like that. But then it's like, okay, let's actually just keep it as close to the game as we can possibly get.
Yeah, from the moment they announced this show, I was like, they have to, like, the ending is one of the most important parts. So like,
yeah,
they really have to, like, marching towards this, I'm like, as close as they can be to that ending, they have to stick with it because it's such a defining moment of that game.
Yeah.
I remember in the Game Informer offices, it seemed like, I think pretty much everyone who finished it was like, oh my God, I can't believe that. Like, it was so powerful and awesome. And so many people were like, they better not ever make a sequel.
Right.
Like, it's such a perfect ending. Like, I can't imagine them doing anything after this. So that was interesting to see. And even when Last of Us Part II was first announced, people were like, oh, I don't know how they continue on from that point. It's such a great place to leave the characters. And
yeah, for sure. I was in that camp too. And this entire show actually made me appreciate The Last of Us Part II more. Like, I like Last of Us Part II a lot more than the first one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I really love it. And the show made me appreciate just like going through this, having those moments of, pardon me, everybody, I know Last of Us is beloved, but have those moments of like, this is still a little post-apocalyptic cliche. Like, I think I kind of get it. You know, these beats. And it just made me appreciate so much in Last of Us Part II of just like, it is so bold and messy and complicated and it's swinging for it. It just made me appreciate it again. So it's twisted to say, but a part of me just feels like, okay, now Last of Us Part One's out of the way. I cannot wait to see where they go and how they tackle the structure of Last of Us Part Two. And now they've said in interviews that, like, yeah, it's going to be more than one season. So seems like probably two seasons for Last of Us Part Two, which is, it's a big game. I get it. I'm curious. I don't know how the hell you divide that into two seasons and like where the stopping point is. Like, it gets so tricky. I don't know.
It's very interesting looking at the structure of the game versus how you would do that, how you would attack that as two season show. Right. It's weird too that they're also saying it's more than one season, but they wouldn't say straight up it's two seasons.
Right.
Yeah. Does that leave it open to three seasons? And are they kind of, obviously Neil knows, I mean, there's no way they're not working on a Last of Us Part 3.
Right. Right.
But, and he knows how long that will take to actually pull together, you know, not a, it's not like a show where you write and you cast and you get location and you shoot it and it's done. Like, you have to have the compelling story for the game. You have to have the graphical technology. Like, we need to push this forward. This will be the first PS5 or PS6 game,
right.
game
yep.
In the series. And you have to make it fun to play on top of all that. In addition, he's also going to be busy doing TV seasons of Last of Us, you know,
what
adapting
a,
part
what
two
a mess.
Into TV.
Oh my God.
So like,
mess.
Are they going to be trying to buy enough time to have Last of Us Part 3 and that game, I mean, that TV show season being able to launch at the same time and not have, and they've always said, we're not going to have a Game of Thrones situation. But how weird would it be if they ended the show after Last of Us Part 2 season?
Yep.
And then Last of Us Part 3, the game came out like 2 years later.
I mean, I think they would pick it back up then. I mean, look at like Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's like, yeah, whenever Larry David wants to come back, the door's wide open. And so they could leave it like that. But the thing you're also forgetting about is they have Last of Us Factions, presumably coming out this year, like the multiplayer game that will have story components. And so maybe there's like, that can help fuel however they structure future content, or maybe there can be kind of a, I don't know, a feature-length movie, kind of like El Camino or something from Breaking Bad that would go in between seasons 2 and 3 or 3 and a potential 4 or something like that. So they're going to have some more storyline stuff to work with if they want to.
I assume Factions would not have any meaningful story at all.
Seems like their messaging is that it has more story than you'd think, but maybe I'm just injecting my own thoughts and wishes into that. But we should probably dive into spoilers for Last of Us Part 2 at this point. Ross, have you played Last of Us Part 2?
I haven't. I'm excited to have the spoiler experience when the show comes out.
Are you at now you've watched the show, are you tempted to start up the game? I know you had been kind of like beaten down by the first game and how tough it is emotionally to get through. Are you tempted now to play the second game just now that you're coming fresh out of the show?
Honestly, I was like, oh, it's nice that there's going to be a show so I can just watch the show and I don't have to have to put myself through the ringer of the game.
Well, now you can if you want to. Like, you know, my friend Rory, who's watching it, it's like he didn't make it that much into Last of Us Part 1 because he's like, it feels too gamey. Like, I don't want to go around and collect a bunch of nonsense into the crafting, blah, 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 blah. And now even after this episode, he's like, you know, maybe it'd be fun to jump right into the game for Part 2 and experience that before the season comes out. So I'm sure there's going to be a big bump in sales for not only Part 1 and the P3 version of Part 1, but then also jump right to Last of Us Part 2. But yeah, so many smart buildups, I think, for Part 2. So clearly, even filming this, they knew exactly where they wanted to go. But hey, that's probably a good spot to wrap this sucker up. So... Ross Fun, thank you for joining, sir.
Hey, glad to be able to talk about this with somebody.
Yeah, for sure. If people want more of you, where should they go? What should they do?
Hey, you can follow me at Are You Bad Enough on Twitter. And if you're in the Twin Cities, check out Dispatch, the arts and culture magazine. I'm doing some coverage of the local pro wrestling scene for them lately. So that's been fun.
Badass. Brian, what's going on with you, man?
Hey. So every once in a while, I'll do a little freelance review for the old Game Informer.
Oh, yeah.
And I also do a lot of writing for a site called Rally. I've done a rundown on the old NES Zelda versus as old the old NES Zelda music versus the Famicom version. And I got to dive into that with friend of the show, Emily Reese.
Oh, nice.
And composer Thomas Cipollone. Who writes a lot of NES chiptune stuff, and we have like Guitar Hero style visuals of all the music. And then I pulled all the reviews from like 1997 about GoldenEye and and kind of examined what people thought when GoldenEye first came out.
Right.
Was
right.
it the sensation that people now know it to be? Or did they were they just kind of like, meh, on to the next?
Right. Cool. And that's at Rally?
Yes.
Sweet.
There's a YouTube channel and there's websites. And so we have written and video essay versions.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, guys. And thanks so much for watching or listening to this episode of Max Spoilers. We'll be back in the future for some dorky content. Bye, everybody.